Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
There's some expansion going on at Deer's Head Hospital Center as the Delmarva Peninsula works to provide for the local population's medical needs. This is Don Rush, and welcome to Delmarva Today. This morning, to take a look at these efforts and the needs of these special patients, our in-studio guests are Mary Beth Wade, CEO for Deer's Head, as well as Tess Eiten, who is the RN, a chief nursing officer, and we will hopefully be joined soon by Maureen McNeil as well. She's director of the development at Coastal Hospice and Palliative Care. And welcome to the program, first of all.
Thank you, Don. We're happy to be here this morning.
Well, Mary Beth, why don't you tell me a little bit about the expansion that's going on there in terms of what's being currently done. I know you're talking about the dialysis, but what are the plans here? What's new going on over there?
Well, in relationship to the expansion, the building project is to renovate our dialysis center. We have a 24-seat dialysis program, and we really serve those who have complex medical needs. It is a five-diamond program, which is a very difficult achievement to accomplish, and so we're very proud of that. Very few centers actually achieve that. The KDU unit has also received the DHMH Team Innovation Award in the last year from the Department of Mental Health and Hygiene. And the expansion allows us to add two additional chairs that will be for isolation purposes for people who need isolation during the dialysis treatments. And in addition, we have a couple of other programs at Deer's Head.
Well, let me ask you this. What kind of demand are we looking at in terms of the kinds of services that you provide? And how do you differ, say, from, say, you know, when most people think about hospitals, they think about the Peninsula Regional Medical Center, right? How would you characterize what you guys are doing as opposed to, say, what we generally think of as hospitals?
Well, our focus is really on patients that need rehabilitative care and also people that would not normally be kept at hospitals. The stays that we have are longer, and part of that is due to rehabilitation, but the other part is to what's going on with the patient's condition. So as a specialty hospital, our requirements for admission are much different than they are for Peninsula Regional or other hospitals. And we have the opportunity of keeping them longer to improve their status. For example, we've had a head injury patient who was in a car accident, and he his parents were told that he would never walk or be able to function, and he is now talking and walking and functioning pretty well. And it's as a result of the efforts that we've had to be able to rehabilitate him and the time that we've been able to do that.
What kinds of patients then come to you?
Those with complex medical needs, so if they have large wounds or dialysis needs, respiratory needs, as Tess said, those with traumatic brain injury, either from some kind of trauma or a stroke or some other illness that produces that. Those are people that really require lots of complex nursing and medical care as well as rehabilitation.
I think one of the things that I'm very proud of as the chief nursing officer is that because we have long-term care patients, very often you get decompensation in terms of pressure ulcer sores. We really have a reputation of really having very few or none. Our nursing care and our CNA care is really excellent. Patients are kept in wonderful shape, and I think it's a testament to the kind of work we do where we have people who, some of our own staff have family members as patients or residents, and there are people who will request to have their families, local people who will request to have their families come and be our patient.
We're also joined by Maureen McNeil, Director of Development at Coastal Hospice and Palliative Care.
My apologies.
No problem. Tell us a little bit about the expansion proposals, the ideas of what you guys are doing over at Hospice, because you've been around, over a quarter of a century or so.
Hospice celebrated 30 years before last, so yes, we've been around quite a while.
So what kinds of expansions are, what's the future look like in terms of what you guys are doing?
The ideal expansion would be in education and understanding, and helping more folks understand what hospice really is and forget the misapprehensions that they have about hospice. But our physical plans are we're renovating our space at Coast Hospice at the Lake at Deer's Head Center. It's been well used for 7 years. It's time. And we are planning to build a hospice residence and outreach center in Worcester County, which will meet the needs of that part of the four counties that we serve. The residence is, pardon me, I'm a little out of breath. The
right.
residence is to reach folks who may not qualify in terms of their mental condition for Coast Hospice at the Lake. That's sort of our hospice hospital, if you will. These are folks that being at home isn't really the safest place for them either. They're elderly. They are living alone. They are living with an equally frail spouse. They reach a point in their care when they really can't be managed day to day. That doesn't qualify them for an inpatient facility like we have at Coast Hospice at the Lake at Deer's Head, but they need something other than what they have. And the notion of uprooting yourself to a nursing home or another well-run facility is kind of hard to imagine at that point in your life. So we are building a residence that folks will be at for 2 or 3 months, and also an outreach center there to be able to deliver palliative care, care that goes to folks who have a life-limiting or otherwise dramatic illness and need help managing all of the symptoms related to that, pain and symptoms, but also anxiety. How am I going to pay for this? How do I talk to my kids about this and about our future? Who is this God that did this to me, if that's how I receive this kind of thing? So it's counseling and support on all of those fronts for people who are probably not eligible for hospice care yet. They aren't at end of life or nearing end of life and aren't really prepared to say, what is it that I need to do in these last few months? But they're addressing their disease, and they also want to address the impact that it's had on their lives.
Having actually personally dealt with some of this in recent years in terms of the elderly, because my parents have gotten very old, and my father actually passed away last year.
I'm sorry.
What kinds of things, that for an individual who's looking at someone who has a parent particularly, mm-hmm. what kinds of things should they be looking for in terms of the kind of care that they think they should need? They may, for instance, be living on their own for the moment, and that may be the best place for them at the moment because everything is familiar, they have a routine,
right.
et cetera, right? And they're in
right.
world. But you move them to another place, and it also it all becomes sort of upended.
Well, and those are really difficult questions. In fact, I can think of someone off the top of my head who has said, but if I walk around in the dark in my own home, I know where I am. If I move to someplace that's smaller, more manageable, I'll hurt myself. That may be. But you could also hurt yourself alone in a house, and there you are. If you're dealing with someone who really can't, and this isn't really my field, hospice care is about medical and symptom management
sure.
and end of life. And palliative care really deals specifically with serious disease and life-limiting conditions. But I sympathize with what you're describing. And what we are offering is actually it's for folks who aren't still walking around in the middle of the night. There are folks who really can't manage to get themselves out of bed, can't manage to meet their own needs. And the person that's taking care of them, they probably retired here away from family. That's what a lot of the retirees in northern Worcester County are about. Not all of our patients are elderly, but
right.
we know that among the elderly patients, there is this need. There is this need for, really, they can't manage themselves, and the person caring for them is in over their heads as well and needs support more than we can offer and probably more than they can afford. So that's what we're planning this residence for. In terms of your question, it's if you can get that person to sit down and look at the pros and cons, that's probably the most logical approach, but I don't think logic applies. In my experience, logic is a toughie. I've had the experience of saying to someone, well, what will happen to you, frail elderly parent, when the other parent becomes ill? The answer I got was, I don't know. So it's a tough one. It's just a tough one. But the important thing is listening and compassion. And that's what hospice offers. That's what Deer's Head offers its patients.
What about, go ahead.
I think it at Deer's Head, we would have a couple solutions to help people through that situation. First, on our specialty hospital side, they could go there for an extended stay to provide rehabilitation, some more additional stabilization of whatever medical crisis put them in a hospital. And that allows them time as well for us to plan, and with our social workers and with the family and with other resources in the community, such as Coastal Hospice if they need it, or a home health agency, a waiver program, and any number of things to get those plans in place and provide the family with options. And again, as Maureen said, to look at some of the pros and cons of each one of those things. And if they need care then beyond the specialty hospital, they can move to our comprehensive care unit, which is a skilled nursing facility, and spend an additional period of time while, again, we make some decisions and transitions and put some resources into place for that person.
I would say I think the key is that we provide coordination of care, which is a struggle for family members. They don't know what's out there for them. They don't know where to go. And so with expertise in managing the disease process, as well as having social workers that know resources, we can really be available to families who really have elderly family members who have an illness and don't know what to do about it. There's so much available, and we know about it because that's what we do, that it's a real resource to families.
I mean, one of the things that struck me, I mean, obviously the shore is actually getting older. It's calling the grain of the shore, so a lot of people are facing this issue. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that struck me, particularly going through my own experience, was that there was no, at least at the time, it didn't seem as if there was some centralized place where you say, okay, here are all these things that you can do, or here are these agencies. Rather, and I certainly found that be true also the medical establishment as well. There were a number of different doctors, and depending upon who you were talking to is what they would recommend and not recommend, and nobody seemed to be talking to one another. I mean, go ahead.
There are a couple of resources I can think of. One is, of course, the MAC Area Agency on Aging. They certainly refer people to us. They refer people to mm-hmm. your programs. They are sort of the clearinghouse for programs and things that help people remain at home or help them determine where their best home is. The other thing I'd suggest is that when we have one more, and that is certainly in the oncology practices, and I think all throughout Peninsula Regional and other hospitals, there's usually somebody who's a patient navigator. So if you've got somebody who's been hospitalized, it takes a little bit of effort at times to be sure that you get that service, but it is there, and it's someone who's very well qualified to figure out what the best course of action is, and their role is to navigate the whole complicated system on behalf of that patient and family. What I'd like to add, too, is if there is someone that you think may ultimately be eligible for hospice, but maybe not now, we have a program called Support at Home. And it's volunteers, so it doesn't cost us, it doesn't cost the families. And it's someone who visits on a regular basis. Sometimes it's just to give some companionship to the person living alone. Sometimes it's also to sort of keep an eye out and on that person's condition, and to help the family come to understand what hospice can offer and what insurance won't cover if we try to. And we're very careful, partly because we need to be careful with our dollars, but also because we want to respect whose role is which in the whole medical establishment, and we know where the boundaries are to our services.
I think as well, we on a regular basis have families that come by to see our facility yeah. and to look at our services, and we are happy at any point in time to bring people through and to tour them and to show them what our services are and talk to them about what we can provide to them and what our outcomes are so that they can begin to get an idea and to plan. And often what happens, we find, too, is that people will be discharged from the hospital with a desire to go home, and they will, and they'll get there, and they'll realize that the challenges are too great there. And they can certainly, at that point, contact us, and we can work with their physicians and try and get them into the facility to allow them additional time to recuperate and provide some additional rehab services to them.
Tess, what about you? I mean, because you deal, obviously, with people, you know, certainly patients on a one-to-one basis. I mean, you know, we're talking about it sort of in the abstract, as it were. But what's your experience in terms of, A, getting the care that they need, but also, B, this idea of knowing how to navigate this very complicated system?
Well, I would have to say that one of the things that drew me to coming to work for Deer's Head was the patient care. I've been a nurse for quite some time and have done a variety of things and have worked long-term care before, and I was just amazed with how well the patients are taken care of. What happens is, because our patients are with us for a fair amount of time, they become part of the family. Our nursing assistants and our nurses really become dedicated. And also, the family becomes part of that, especially with someone like that young, that gentleman I was referring to. His family is like part of us. And so the care, what we can do differently is that our nurse-to-patient ratio is smaller, so that, for example, my nurses have seven patients, where in some other places they'd have as many as 20 or 30. So the care is much more focused and whole, more holistic, and the GNA is in the same light. I mean, we also have a team approach with managers that will manage what happens on each unit. One of the things that's really exciting is with Mary Beth as our new CEO, we've got all kinds of wonderful initiatives that help our patients even more, but also give the staff more opportunity to interface, like more wellness-based in terms of activities that would get them moving, and diet, where we would look at things in a, you know, we're talking about eating local like a lot of other people are. So the piece that is great with us, and we're a smaller hospital, so we can really be much more part of the community. And the community plays a major role in what we do, not only through our families, but in how we interface with them.
I think one other thing to kind of build on, Tess, was one of the initiatives that we've just are in the process of educating our staff for are really the Ask 3 campaign, which is about health literacy. That really goes to, I think, some of what you're talking about and what we really want to work with the patients and their families on. And this is a national health literacy campaign, is to really be able to ask 3 questions when you are working with your healthcare providers. The first one is to be able to ask, what is my main problem? And to put it in simple language like that, and then get an answer back from your provider, whoever you're working with. Second question would be, what do I need to do? So first, what is my main problem? What do I need to do to address that main problem? And the last question is, why is it important for me to do this? So if they give you a diagnosis, what does that mean? What do you need to do then to take care of yourself? And then why is it important that you take that pill or do this exercise or make this appointment or have this treatment or that test? And get answers to these questions. And that really will help you then form an opinion about what you need to do next and where you need to go and what services you might need to have in place. And we are in the process of educating our staff, and then we're going to work with our families and our patients and residents so that they are well-versed in these questions. And our hope is that then they are able, when they'll interact with us, but then they'll go to another healthcare provider. And if we train them to ask these questions, they'll ask the questions at the next stop. So they'll then be more educated and more aware, and they will be able then to make more informed decisions.
Well, let me ask you, each one of you, to because we were talking about this sort of in the abstract, but all of you have encountered patients in one time or another, individuals. Can you give me an example of an individual, I'm not looking for names, but an individual who sort of exemplifies the kinds of things that we're talking about in terms of trying to navigate this and trying to, you know, and particularly with family, trying to deal with obviously the elderly, but also obviously other conditions as well, trying to figure out how to make all this work.
Sure.
Any one of you, yeah.
Well, and I wanted to... we've had several. What we ask our patients first is, what is your goal? And when I meet with folks and tell them, my office is on Racetrack Road in Berlin, and so we get a lot of walk-in traffic. And folks will come in and say, I'm not sure if hospice is for me. And I'll say, well, our representative will come talk to you and ask you, what's your goal? And one gentleman who had a terminal diagnosis said, goal. You know, that's the last thing he expected to be able to have. And actually, it's very much at the heart of what we do. So for that gentleman, hearing that he was allowed to have goals and that was where we were hoping to go with him was eye-opening for both of us, I think. It was the first time I'd asked that of someone who gave me quite that response. A lot of people are still in sort of a haze when they've gotten a very serious diagnosis. The other thing that I think I see is that there's a real reluctance on the part of the family, and I'm thinking of somebody very specific that I also won't name, that as much as they might know about what's available, especially to someone dealing with a life-limiting condition, they're very reluctant to turn to the patient and say, you know, it might be time to call hospice. And when I'm saying the person, that could be the physician who's reluctant to say that. That could be the family member who's reluctant to say, you know, it might be time to call hospice. Yet, what happens is, and we've done a study that verifies this or that illustrates this, what happens is they stop chemo if it's cancer because chemo is starting to have a real impact on quality of life. And then they don't say, let me find out what hospice has. They say, let me see what I can do on my own. And they come to a crisis, and they call the ambulance, and they go to the emergency room, and then they go to the ICU. And the least important part of this as an individual might be the cost that, but there's a real cost in terms of quality of life and anxiety that goes along with that. Had they said, if I'm going to stop chemo, if I'm going to take a break from treatment, and as my own mother did, she was battling two conditions, and she said, I'm tired of going to doctors. I just want to be able to live, call in hospice. Had they done that, we would have been managing their pain. We would have been paying attention to their symptoms. We would have prevented that crisis moment, or at least we would have been present for it and helped the family figure out what to do. We would have had time to educate the family what to do when a crisis comes. So what I see is people being reluctant to actually open up to the possibilities around them that seem scary at first. That's really not a reason not to explore them, whether it's long-term treatment or hospice care.
I want to pursue this just a moment. There seems to be like this sort of this moment that you have to come to when you're deciding about hospice.
Absolutely.
How do you come to that point? I mean, how do you know? Because you're really relying upon people who are either family members or you're the individual themselves. I mean,
or the ER doc who says, "Has your family thought about hospice?" And God love the ER docs because emergency department docs they're called now, but mm-hmm. they're the ones that see it and say, "There's really not that much I can do for this person." I think we've seen a shift in medicine so that we're looking at the person more than we're looking at the condition, and I think that's what it's going to take. But that those shifts take time. But really, it's recognizing that what you're doing, and it's that old definition of insanity, isn't it? That you keep trying to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. What you're doing isn't working. The life you're living isn't fulfilling and happy. And we can never assume that those are things that are beyond our reach. I used to talk about hospice in terms of a journey. If you're traveling somewhere, you make your plans. I know people who book the reservations at Disney well in advance. You want to get everything you can out of that journey. Well, there's this journey that affords all kinds of opportunities for personal growth that we ourselves take at the end of life or that we witness with someone. Why not mine that journey for everything it's worth in terms of personal growth? And that's what hospice has to offer. So if you find that what you're doing is, forgive the phrase, circling the drain, stop. Look around you and say, what quality of life do I have? What quality of life do I want? Let's look for the resources to get that.
Tess Marine, again, we've talked about trying to navigate this very complicated medical establishment and healthcare system. Anybody come to mind and we're trying to navigate this that either successful or not successful, I mean, in terms of your own experience?
Yes. I very often our patients come to us from PRMC. They come to us from PRMC, start out in the specialty hospital, get their rehab, and are taken care of for their illness. And then, at times, they'll be transferred to our long-term care facility. Well, that is invisible to the family, and it's sort of a natural process. In the outside world, outside of Deer's Head, family members would have to know how to do that. So once they get into our long-term care facility, then we look at, okay, what's the next step? Are they able to go to a waiver program, which is part of a Medicare where they can go home with help? So we arrange that through our social worker, and our social worker works on that. Or in the case of someone who has a head injury program, we look for a facility that would be like an assisted living, where this person could function somewhat independently but still have medical supervision. Those are things a family wouldn't know how to do. So it's part of what we offer, and it is so seamless that sometimes I think we don't realize, and families don't realize, how so much has been taken care of. So we really can do from beginning to end, and it's very similar to hospice. Our goal is, what can we do to make this person's life as possible as it can be? You know, how can we make them, once we rehab them, then what can we do to give them a quality of life in the condition that they're in when they've finished all of that? And so that's what we do. And there are many people that come to mind that we've been able to do that with. Actually, it's pretty much everybody. And there are some patients that don't leave our long-term care facility and stay with us for various reasons. But it is a continuum where you enter through a facility, usually a hospital, and we take you through the process where we can get you into a state where you can function. And then we try to then find a place that you can function for the rest of whatever time you have.
You know, one of the things, by the way, we have not talked about is cost. And, you know, we've had a great healthcare debate, and we've continued to have a great healthcare debate about lowering costs and what it costs and Medicare and whether or not they're going to change that program and so on. And I want to ask each of you, what about the cost of healthcare and the kind of resources that, say, somebody may or may not be able to bring to it? I mean, I had a certain learning experience about Medicaid and that sort of Medicare, what it covers, doesn't cover, particularly the end of that, end of life. What kind of resources are out there, and how does one navigate that particular component? Because that's probably one of the things that really is perhaps maybe most difficult in terms of knowing about. What about that?
For hospice, it's pretty straightforward. If you have insurance, and many of our patients have Medicare, there is a hospice benefit, it's covered. And what I mean by it's covered, if you are our patient and you have the hospice benefit either through insurance, and I'll get to the folks that don't have that in a sec, either through insurance or through Medicare, everything you need, we get a per diem reimbursement, but everything you need is covered. Medications, medical equipment, aid visits, nurse visits, physician visits, it's all covered. So once you are a patient, if you are covered if you have a hospice benefit, and most people do, you're in. We spent about $450,000 last year on folks who had no means of supporting themselves or had limited, and we met the rest of the distance. We bring in a sliding scale where we need to. There's no one that we don't help who has limited means or who because of their inability to pay. If they are not appropriate for hospice, we don't make them hospice patients.
Maureen, real briefly, got about 30 seconds there.
I think that one of the things that differentiates Deer's Head Hospital Center is that we are a safety net for patients who have families who have no resources. Mm-hmm. If you have no payer source, that does not prevent you from being admitted to Deer's Head Hospital Center. And we will then work with you to try and find resources, because obviously we would like to get some reimbursement if it is available. But that is not something that prevents you from coming to us, which is, I think, unique about our setting.
We've been speaking with Mary Beth Wade. She's the CEO for Deer's Head. Also, Tess Iden. She is the Chief Nursing Officer at Deer's Head, as well as Maureen McNeil, Director of Development at Coastal Hospice and Palliative Care. And we appreciate you all joining us. So you've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.